You are listening to a Bible talk recorded at the 2019 Western Christadelphian Bible School at Manuka. This is the third class in a series given by Brother Doug Davis on the subject, Exploring the Millennial Period. This class is titled, A New World Order.
Good morning. It's lovely. We finished yesterday with this, with the end of the kingdom of men and the beginning of the kingdom of Christ. And we're going to pick up here at the point of the stone, talking about that. And with this, it starts with a small stone and ends up in a mountain at the end as it covers the earth. And we have also, as the waters cover the sea, the oceans, so will the spread of Christ's rule happen. And this particular verse in Daniel, as you looked, a stone was cut out by no human hand, and it smote the image on its feet of iron and clay and broke them in pieces. Then the iron and the clay, the bronze, the silver, and the gold, all together were broken in pieces and became like the chaff of the summer threshing floors. And the wind carried them away so that none, not a trace, and that's an interesting point, not a trace of them could be found, but the stone that struck the image became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. And again, in talking with many of you, and also I appreciate comments made with John when I was talking to him, John Popel, it was also, we cannot lose sight of the spiritual concept of this, is that that stone represents us. And as it grows, as the kingdom grows, the mountain of Christ grows with this. And we all make up that. It's no different than Norm Fidel's class in terms of when we started with his class talking about being cut, the stones built. And for me, that's the whole temple, that we are being formed now quietly. And then when Christ returns, we're all brought into this temple at this point and creates his temple. And so from a small action to a large action. And right away, my mind went to the high priest, which is so fitting in this particular case. When we look at the high priest, on its skirts you shall make pomegranates of blue and purple and scarlet stuff around its skirts with bells and golden gold between a golden bell and a pomegranate, a golden bell and a pomegranate round about on the skirts of the robe. And you think this is kind of an interesting perspective, that why they would do that when, you know, bring in a bell and a pomegranate. And here's a close-up of what that actually would look like. And it makes sense. It's a tie-in. It's a future echo to Christ. Pomegranates, it's a singular one. Out of one come a multitudinous seed. And so that's when, every time I eat a pomegranate, I cannot help but think of Christ. Because it's every time, it's just this one emblem, and then you open it up, and there we all are. And it forms that. And that's the purpose of this. And by the way, just a side note, in terms of the golden bells, that's us as well, the refined by fire, the gold. And what is the purpose of the bell? At the bottom is to call out. And that's why churches have bells in their steeples. It's to call out the people to come to me. And this is what Christ does. And as the high priest would walk, you could hear the bells and be reminded that out of the one is the many. And that is, again, the beautiful imagery of our kingdom that we are going to be a part of. And so in Revelation 7, 9, 10, after this I looked and behold a great multitude. And there's that beautiful, again, out of one comes a multitude, which no man could number, from every nation, from all tribes and peoples and tongues, and standing before the throne and before the Lamb, clothed in white robes and palm branches in their hands, and crying out with a loud voice, salvation belongs to our God who sits upon the throne and is to the Lamb. And so here we have this image of us. We're looking forward to this time. And it's speaking in terms right now that are all metaphors for us. And yet this is going to become a reality very shortly. So there is going to be, again, we realize that Christ has established the calling of the multitudes. And it's an interesting point. I just want to bring this one up, is to show you, this is what Christianity, from the spread of Christ's time on the earth, what it looked like over all the different empires and kingdoms that had taken place during that time to the modern time. And the gray is how where Christianity spread. And I want you to appreciate the time it took from one man, being Christ Jesus, to today, with all of us as part of the multitude. And you look at the different empires and how Islam spread, but then Christianity shrinks and it expands over time. And it's quite a fascinating thing when you look at this as to how it has a life of its own. And regardless of the empires, it never obviously ends. There's always a remnant somewhere. And again, you take a look at the Mongols and quickly they're out, but then Christianity still is there, but then it shrinks in certain areas because of the takeover of Islam in that particular area. And then you see how it's spreading around that, trying to get to work. And these are all saints. These are all believers that are trying to keep the word spreading and working throughout the world. Isn't that fascinating? How, and it took 2,000 years in that particular time frame to make that kind of establishment. And you think about that on a community by community basis. And I want you to remember that, because as we start to talk about this tomorrow, it's the mortals working with the immortals. And how does this education take place? And brothers and sisters, it isn't like this. It isn't a snap of the fingers and all of a sudden everybody has this knowledge. It is going to be up to the saints to spread that word and to be out there. And it's quite an interesting sight when we look at it, how far it has come from that time frame. But then I look at it, and it's interesting, just to even look at our own body, the splits, the differences within Christianity itself. And that will all now become one at that time frame, which are just during the kingdom period, that will all be done away with. And there will only be one kingdom, not these multitudinous empires and kingdoms that have come and gone over the time. And that's why Daniel's image is such an important one, that we see the change that has taken place, that yes, God understands that man is going to try to establish himself, but he can never be the one. So I thought that would be an interesting look, and it also sets the tone, because we're going to have a scenario here where it is going to radiate out of Israel, no different than what we just saw on that. And it will radiate out, and it starts in Israel and then goes to the following nations after that. And so empires, human monarchies, republics, and democracies will become things of the past. The rulers who survive of the into the millennial period will have to realize Jesus' kingship and submit to him and be taken out of power. And this is not going to be an easy thing. He will be great and will be called the Son of the Most High, and the Lord will God will give to him the throne of his father David, and he will reign over the house of Jacob forever. Forever, brothers and sisters, and of his kingdom, there will be no end. This is something that the earth has never seen before, as we know. Daniel again ties that in. And to him was given dominion and glory and kingdom that all peoples and nations and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion which shall not pass away, and his kingdom one that it shall not be destroyed. So we have this re-emphasis that, again, his kingdom will never go away. And I just love these verses, as we know. And again, it relates also to the birth when God speaks to Mary. But for to us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government will be upon his shoulder, and his name will be called Wonderful, Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. And it's important for us to understand these things, because right now the monarchies of today's worlds are not necessarily peaceful people. There will be, and again, we don't look them to them as fathers either. Of the increase of his government and of peace, there will be no end upon the throne of David and of his king over his kingdom, to establish it and to uphold it with justice and with righteousness from this time forth forevermore. The zeal of the Lord of hosts will do this. And so at first, the land of Israel has got to be reclaimed. And we go back to the Abrahamic covenant. So it talks about what land is rightfully the Jews' land. And what is that? And we know now, today, right now, it's just a small little sliver. And this is where that kingdom, the promise, has been given to take over. And you look at the countries it is It's touching, right? It is not going to be an easy go. The destruction that takes place will be massive. These countries, obviously, are all impacted by that destruction at the time that we talked about yesterday. And so what will these countries look like at the time that Christ establishes his kingdom? We remember that the earthquakes that took place, all the issues that took place. And again, Brother John Warner made a comment yesterday that I didn't touch base or touch on yesterday. But if you think about the impact on the water bodies around that tsunami situations, and it's just not earthquakes here. Is there earthquakes around the world? Because that Rift Valley, when it goes, what impacts will that have? And we will even be impacted in North America by it. And so you have to think of the power. It's just not necessarily an isolated area that this is taking place. It's impacting the whole world on so many levels. But then will these countries be willing to give up their sovereignty? And will they agree to bow down to the king that is now establishing himself in Israel? Because we're told, for the earth shall be full of the knowledge of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. And as I mentioned earlier, this is not going to be an overnight event, brothers and sisters. It shall come to pass in the latter days that the mountain of the house of the Lord shall be established as the highest of the mountains and shall be raised above the hills, and all the nations shall flow to it. And many people shall come. That's a beautiful image, and we're going to get into that more. And say, come, let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob, that he may teach us his ways and that we may walk in his paths. For out of Zion shall go forth the law and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. That's a promise. And that, who is going to be establishing this law for us? We will be. The saints will be going out and establishing that law, backed completely by our king. And we will be representing him. And it's interesting that the only one, or the feast that is mentioned that survives into the kingdom period is the Feast of Booths. Then everyone that survives of all the nations that have come against Jerusalem shall go up year after year to worship the king, the Lord of hosts, and to keep the Feast of Booths. And if any of the families of the earth do not go up to Jerusalem to worship the king, the Lord of hosts, there will be no rain upon them. And if the family of Egypt do not go up and present themselves, then upon them shall come the plague with which the Lord afflicts the nations that do not go, or do not go up to keep the Feast of Booths. That shall be the punishment to Egypt and the punishment to all the nations that do not go up to keep the Feast of Booths. This is not a suggestion. It's a command. Now, a question, and I'd like to hear that afterwards, but your thoughts on, does it literally mean that everybody, the whole world, year after year, will go up to Israel? Or are we allowed to do it in our own communities? And so right now, when we were living in Toronto, when the Feast of Booths happened, the Jewish people that were celebrating it were building their tabernacles on their apartment balconies, in their backyards. They were following that tradition, but they were honoring in the nation that they were in. And so it'll be an interesting thought, but I love the vision of us all going and surrounding the mountain of the Lord and in praising. And that's a beautiful spiritual ingathering, if you think of it, that we are that first fruits. So that, in essence, the first fruits feast is actually taking place because we are all going to be around that. And the Lord said to Moses, say to the people of Israel, on the 15th day of the seventh month and of the 7 days is the Feast of Booths to the Lord. On the first day shall be a holy convocation. You shall do no laborious work. 7 days you shall present offerings by fire to the Lord. On the eighth day you shall hold a holy convocation and present an offering by fire to the Lord. It is a solemn assembly. You shall do no laborious work. And so you have this image again of people coming together and having this beautiful convocation. And when you look at the word convocation, the definition of it, something called out that is a public meeting, the act of persons or the place, also a rehearsal, assembly, calling, convocation, reading. And this, brothers and sisters, up to this point, what are they rehearsing? Right now, when they're doing the Feast of Booths, what is their rehearsal? They are practicing for something that is coming. whenever we rehearse, it's for an event that we're going to partake in. And so you have this image that right now we're all rehearsing for this because we're awaiting the return and to establish this time in Israel and then the world. And then you have that image of ingathering. And brothers and sisters, we look at this ingathering, and it's a beautiful time when we look at it, that it's when the first fruits come and they're bringing in those fruits to give thanks to God for the bountifulness that he's brought. But we represent those first fruits. We are the first fruits. And when Christ, in 1 Corinthians 15, we see the first fruits being mentioned, for he is the first fruit. And that reference back to the high priest at the beginning of the slides or the presentation today, we have this image of, do you recall when Mary comes to Christ and she sees him in the garden, she says, "My Lord," and he says, "Do not hold on to me at this time, for I have not yet ascended to the Father." Why is that? Because he represents the first fruit. As soon as he's resurrected, what the high priest is supposed to do is he takes the first fruits that have been given to the high priest. By himself, he goes before the Lord and he waves the first fruits. And so at that time, he had not yet ascended. And so now he's presenting himself before his Father as the first fruit. And then after that comes all the celebration. And so it's a wonderful image that now he's already presented himself, and now we are his first fruits. You think about that in the kingdom. We are that representation of that ingathering, this beautiful time frame that takes place. And I love the presentation. Can you imagine us coming before him at that time when we are resurrected, or we are now changed and we're coming before him? And there's this whole thankfulness and this whole realization that what you have done for us, what you've given us, and what you've provided for us, and that everything you have said is true. So you shall keep it as a feast of the Lord 7 days in the year. It is a statute for those forever throughout your generations. You shall keep it in the seventh month. You shall dwell in the booths. And then we're back to the tabernacles now. 7 days, all that are native in Israel shall dwell in the booths, that your generations may know that I made the people of Israel dwell in booths when I brought them out of the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. Thus Moses declared to the people of Israel the appointed feasts of the Lord. It's an interesting time, brothers and sisters. If you think about it, the purpose of the booths was for them never to forget where they came from. When they came out of the land of Egypt, they dwelt in booths. And they were never supposed to forget this. And so this is an interesting passage when you look at it for us, that is going to be the feast that we do when we come into the kingdom. Why? So that we don't forget what God has done for us. By his might, through Christ, he has allowed us to come out of the world and into his promised land. And so year after year, we will remember this. We will be reminded, and we will physically have a feast. But the interesting thing is that when you go into this, the Jews, first of all, in the millennial period, the Jews were brought out of the bondage, brought to a new land, a new way of life, new observances to teach and remind us of our past, to teach generations to come. In the present world and kingdom, Jesus brings us out of the bondage of death. He changes the world. He provides a new life. The feast causes us to gather and celebrate what Jesus has done for us, and it allows the nations to teach their children year after year, this is what it means. And brothers and sisters, we will talk about this in the last class as to what will happen with the children after so many years and so many generations, or there will be approximately 3 generations in the kingdom. We'll talk about that. But where will they be? What will they grow up to believe in that time frame? And that's an interesting observation. Will it become rote for them? Will they really remember what it was like to be a part of this and be transferred into the kingdom? And on this mountain, the Lord of hosts will make for all peoples a feast of fat things, a feast of wine on the lees, of fat things full of marrow, of wine on the lees, well refined. And he will destroy on this mountain the covering that is cast over all the peoples, the veil that is spread over all the nations. He will swallow up death forever, and the Lord God will wipe away tears from all faces. and the reproach of his people he will take away from all the earth. For the Lord has spoken. It will be said on that day, lo, this is our God. We have waited for him that he might save us. This is the Lord, we have waited for him. Let us be glad and rejoice in his salvation. At a point, we've got to look at what will happen with the nations coming about. As is back to the map, you start to see all the nations round about, and you look at all the nations that are on the earth. They've got to bow down to Christ at some point. They've got to accept him as the king. And it'll be interesting to see how that response will go over. Thus says the Lord of hosts, people shall yet come, even the inhabitants of many cities. The inhabitants of one city shall go to another, saying, let us go at once to entreat the favor of the Lord and to seek the Lord of hosts. I am going. Many peoples and strong nations shall come to seek the Lord of hosts in Jerusalem and to entreat the favor of the Lord. Thus says the Lord of hosts, in those days, 10 men from the nations of every tongue shall take hold of the robe of a Jew, saying, let us go with you, for we have heard that God is with you. So you have this realization taking place. May all the kings fall down before him, all nations serve him. Turn to me and be saved, all the ends of the earth, for I am God, and there is no other. By myself I have sworn, from my mouth has gone forth in righteousness a word that shall not return. To me every knee shall bow, and every tongue shall swear. Only in the Lord it shall be said of me, our righteousness and strength. To me shall come and be ashamed all who were incensed against him. In the Lord, all the offspring of Israel shall triumph in glory. So you have this changing effect that's going on. And you're going to have people that have realized that they spoke against him. They were enemies of Israel and of God. And they'll realize what they have done. And turn to me and be saved. In Isaiah 45, 22, 25. Turn to me and be saved, all the ends of the earth, for I am God and there is no other. By myself I have sworn, for my mouth has gone forth in righteousness, a word that shall not return. To me every knee shall bow. That's an interesting point when we look at this. And every tongue shall swear. Can you imagine what it will take for that to happen? Only in the Lord it shall be said of me, our righteousness and strength. To him shall come and be ashamed all who were incensed against him. So we have kingdoms of men. And in Daniel 7:14, and to him was given dominion and glory and kingdom of all, that all peoples, nations, and languages serve him. His dominions is an everlasting dominion, which shall not pass away, and his kingdom one that shall not be destroyed. So we have the kingdoms of men that we are aware of, how they all run. They're a limited kingship. The kingdoms come and go. Royal families come and go. Limited geographic scope. And they all are eventually destroyed. But under Christ, dominion and glory over all nations, as we've been reading, it is everlasting. The king shall not pass away. It shall not pass away, the whole his kingdom, and it shall never be destroyed. Then everyone that survives of the nations that have come against Jerusalem shall go up year after year to worship the king, the Lord of hosts, and to keep the Feast of Booths, as we've discussed. And if any of the families, as we mentioned, of the earth do not go up to Jerusalem to worship the king, the Lord of hosts, there will be no rain upon them. It's an interesting vision when you think of it. How will that take place? And again, why would those nations not come up? We're starting to see that there is going to be a differentiation. People are not going to accept his reign. Free will still runs on the earth. So what does that look like? People will begin to isolate or solidify in camps. They'll begin to be polarized. And that will start to happen earlier on in the kingdom and then progress over time. And as we see, as we know in our studies, at the end of the 1,000-year period, there's a final battle, a final uprising against Christ. That is an interesting thought. Why and how can they think that they could possibly do this? But because free will still exists, they have the choice of either following or not. But there are consequences of not following him. And so for the nations and the kingdoms that will not serve you shall perish. Those nations shall utterly be laid waste. The mind goes to how will that take place? Who will be involved in those situations? And brothers and sisters, again, it'll be us. And so before the Gentiles can enjoy universal peace, their present rulers must be dethroned. God has permitted mortal men to rule the world for nearly 6,000 years. They have tried every conceivable form of government, but all have failed to produce consistent long-term justice, peace, and righteousness. Jesus will take matters into his own hand in a more direct manner than he has ever yet done. And these are the things that we can pay lip service to, but what happens at the end of the day? What does that actually look like? How will we actually execute for Christ? His will. We will be ones going out to these nations and working with them, converting them. And if not, potentially destroying them. Right now, we are so used to a certain method of government. He hath appointed a day and a period of time in which you will judge and rule the world in righteousness by that man whom he has ordained, whereof he that giveth assurance unto all men in that he hath raised him from the dead. So he has been ordained. He's our king, as we keep saying. Jesus will be king over all the earth. Right now, here, and I've got another slide after our discussion, but here right now are all the current monarchies around, or different types of government. It's interesting is that you'll see that the last one here, Vatican City, is considered a monarchy or a kingdom, right? And then we have some of them there. But in this particular case, I broke it down that I did a study or an analysis, and you start to look at right now, absolute monarchies in the current earth are about 7. Those that are under a constitutional monarchy, there's about 37 countries. And then the ones that are considered republics are 147. It's an interesting view that, do we really get what it means to be under a king? We do not. We're used to a republic. Well, actually, we're a constitutional monarchy in Canada. So we still recognize the queen, but we have a parliament and a government. But we, by being a republic, we elect. It's the government for the people, correct? So here's an interesting thought, is that right now, nobody on earth except, and interesting enough, a number of the monarchies all surround Israel. Like Saudi Arabia is a monarchy. And will they give it up early? Easily. But the people understand what it means to be under a monarchy. We have no clue. So can you imagine the mortals that now go into the kingdom period? What kind of mindset will they have? Where did the republic begin? The French Revolution. French Revolution started it from that perspective of, what are the three? Fraternity, equality, and liberty. A kingdom does not allow those things. And so can you imagine how people will be upset when they have to say, I've got to submit? I've never submitted to a king. And so you now start to see the seeds will be laid because that is understood. And so now they have to be, first of all, they have to be educated, and they have to realize that they're no longer under a republic or even a constitutional monarchy. They're under an absolute monarchy. And so they are not going to go lightly into this. And so his master said to them, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a little. I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your master. What is this setting over much? Will we be the ones taking over towns and cities given to us as the mortals to run those towns and cities? We're told that the 12 apostles will be judges, right? On the earth, but the issue is that there is a hierarchy. There is something that comes into place. But who will be doing that? Who will be, again, educating? And for this to take place, as it says, for all the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. That has got to happen through action. And that'll be our action, brothers and sisters. Do you not know that the saints will judge the world? And if the world is to be judged by you, are you incompetent to try trivial cases? Do you not know that we are to judge angels? That's an interesting thought. How much more matters pertaining to this life? And the angels there would be more like the priests, the leaders, the spiritual leaders of the world. And if they cannot do the job, they will be judged by us. But just thoughts on that. I wouldn't mind having a discussion in terms of how you see this happening, in terms of the spread out of the saints into the God or Christ's kingdom, in terms of how we will be leaders in those. When does that start now? It has to be us, brothers and sisters, in terms of how we are addressing one another, how we are learning, how are we taking on Christ at this time? And again, how are we dealing with one another? I think those qualities, those blessings that we've been given now, how are we addressing that? And will we be able to carry that over into the kingdom? And that will be carried over by us into the kingdom. And again, it is a marvelous time. And I look for us, again, when we look at this and talk about one another, I look forward to, again, having these discussions. And I thank you for the time. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.